Next on the agenda, professional standards board regulations for discussion or action. Dr. Linnea Bradshaw, Executive Director of Professional Standards Board, will review one regulation for action and two for information. Dr. Bradshaw, welcome. First on the list is Regulation 1590, Charter School Leader. It is for action.
Regulation 1596 was voted affirmatively to forward to the board at the March 6th Professional Standards Board meeting. I assume you've all read the final order, which contains a summary of the comments and a finding of facts and conclusions of the board. and in short, for any guests who have not read the final order, we received 34 comments, 32 of which were opposed to the proposed amendment. 13, or just over a third, mentioned or otherwise indicated that the PSB revert to the version that was published in October. That is the version that did not contain the word instructional in 4.1.3.2. Others were more general. Despite the public comment, the board felt that including the word instructional is appropriate because instructional administrators, given the definition and responsibilities of instructional administrators, and we heard a lot about administrators today, which are to supervise and evaluate educators, as well as design and implement curriculum, the board did not find the comments to drop the word instructional persuasive. we do know you've heard a lot about the quality of the principal programs and the care that the Educator Excellence team takes with the programs. The Charter Leader ARTC program is something that has not yet been implemented. It is not yet fully approved because the regulation has to be forwarded and finished in order to get that approved. But it would be in the very capable hands of the charter partners as well as our partners in Educator Excellence. And so I think, are there any questions? I am not going to verbally summarize everything. Everything is in the final order.
Are there any questions for Dr. Bradshaw on Regulation 1596?
I have a question that might be somewhat contentious. Is help me understand why the requirements for a traditional school leader would be different from a charter school leader if the end goal is the same, which is to educate our students.
and I know you weren't on the board at the time when we did this, but so traditional school leadership follows a very traditional path from licensed experience in a public school into one of the traditional paths. And they do not have the same types of flexibilities that charter schools have. Just as an example, we have two military charter schools. Mm-hmm. And so generally speaking, the folks who might be leading that, who have military leadership experience, that's one of the reasons that is one of the pieces in here. Those folks would be deemed ineligible to come into any program for school principalship within the traditional system. Now, the system works pretty well for district schools because, you know, most people follow the traditional path of being a teacher or another educator, and then, you know, they move forward. Charter schools often have a different path. They might have different needs. And, you know, we're in a different place than we were 2 years ago because 2 years ago, we weren't talking about this ARTC program for charter leaders. And I think that the combination of flexibility for, you know, in the backgrounds of the people who might come to work or lead a charter school, and, you know, the specific needs of those charter schools might not fit that exact mold. A perfect example also is Montessori, because, and we have a couple commenters from our Montessori schools, but honestly, if you are Montessori certified, you may not have a traditional certification. And so when a Montessori school is searching for a leader, they might be looking for somebody who is not from that traditional mold and who might face real extreme barriers coming into, you know, just say the traditional pipeline for principal, assistant principal, school principal, yet they could come in to the charter school ARTC program because they may have worked in a Montessori for many years, but may not have had a traditional certification ever. Some states have a Montessori certification. Delaware does not have a Montessori certification. And so...
But Montessori schools don't fall under charter schools, right?
Yes, they are. We have
two or three.
Two charter Montessoris.
Oh.
Two, yeah. And so a lot of Montessoris are private, but we have two charter schools that are Montessori schools. And they have faced hiring issues because of the narrowness of, you know, the traditional certification.
So, but from what we heard tonight, right? So yeah. I kept asking, is this different for charter versus traditional? So what I learned is that there's no difference in the mentoring, leadership prep, professional learning, coaching, et cetera. But when you're training these leaders or preparing them or coaching them, but why should it be different in the end?
I wouldn't say it's different in the end. I would say it's different in the beginning.
Okay.
It's different as to who they can have entering into their program. And then it is specifically tailored because charters do have, you know, different needs. You know, I wouldn't say it's cookie cutter. Every school is different. But generally speaking, you become assistant principal of a traditional school. And most people don't ever become a principal without first being an assistant principal. Charter schools may only have one leader. They might have more than one leader, but they may not have a traditional assistant principal type of role. They have different types of responsibilities. They have different financial responsibilities. That's one piece that I think, like, correct me if I'm wrong, is like in the school finance piece in the charter program, they're going to be talking specifically about like how charters are financed and how they allocate their funds as opposed to the finance courses I took in my leadership program, which were not like that. So does that make sense? It's like a different focus and it's more of a flexibility in who comes into the program as opposed to, you know, where the goal is, I think you heard very clearly tonight that no matter what the program is, because that charter leader program would be under the auspices of Ed Excellence with all of the things that they do and all of the data and all of the collection and all of the things that they have, that it would become, that it would really have a similar endpoint. Does that make sense? Not the same, but a similar endpoint.
Right. But the end goal, whether you're in a traditional school or a charter school, is to educate the kids, right?
Absolutely.
So why should the requirements be different for the leaders, the principal versus the charter school?
Again, the program is based on the same standards. And the requirements are different because the programs, not again, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but like the PPP program and the charter leader program that you're looking at, you know, and that you've looked at are both based on the PSEL standards. It's just the viewpoint of the types of school leading. I mean, you can say that, but we were down this road 2 years ago and it did not work. And I'm not interested. Well, I shouldn't say, I mean, it's not up to me. We were here 2 years ago and that traditional model does not work for the charter schools. They have been very vocal that they want to be able to train their leaders. They don't want unqualified people leading their schools because as we know, it is one of the most important factors in school success is a good leader. But there isn't, I mean, we have what, five different types of prep programs, mm-hmm. and there none of them are exactly the same. Mm-hmm. But the end result is if it's a certification under regulation 1591 or regulation 1596, mm-hmm. I would say they're probably more similar than different.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Yeah, I've got a question and a couple of comments. In the finding of facts, it mentioned the term other instructional setting is not limited to a traditional classroom environment.
Yes.
What does that term encompass? What does that term envision?
Well, we wanted to make sure that, again, to honor the wishes of what the charter schools wanted, was adding the word instructional did not mean that it had to be particularly just classroom instruction, but there are many people in the wider world whose job is instruction, but do not work particularly for schools, and particularly for traditional certification, it's, licensed experience. And so, I mean, instruction could be we have a military setting here, but instruction could be in a military setting, could be a military instructor. It is still very broad, but it is narrower, I think, than my colleagues behind me would have wished it to be, given the comments that we've had. But the board felt that the practice of instruction and knowing how to teach content to people was something that was important in someone who would be an instructional administrator.
Is it safe to say that the word instructional, being as undefined as it is, was intentional to be descriptive rather than prescriptive?
Yes.
I guess what concerns me there is, again, having done both, having taught in a traditional public school and looking at the coursework that was required to enable me to do that, to receive that certification, I think of all of the courses that I had to take, both in child development, child psychology, developing curriculum, pedagogy, methods and materials, all of the coursework that was required in a four-year period, plus practical experience during my college years, plus my student teaching. And then I look at the required coursework that I had to take to continue on for my principal certification in Massachusetts, which also included, coursework in a particular area, reading language arts for me, but also on, administrative studies in order to be certified. I can't see how you get that level of expertise and knowledge when I look at an ARTC program separate from experience, saying you don't need any school experience. How an ARTC program is going to give you that depth and knowledge to be able to fulfill the role that instructional administrators state, which is that they are assigned to supervise and evaluate educators, instruct students by means of designing and implementing curriculum, or instruct, train, mentor, or coach teachers. I'm struggling to understand how you can coach a teacher if you've never been there. That's what I'm struggling with. When I want to be coached in something, I'm anticipating that the person that's coaching me has done what it is I'm trying to learn. A golf instructor obviously should know how to play golf and has been a golf instructor before coming to me. To me, is just a normal and natural expectation. The other piece that I'm struggling with is when I look at that definition of instructional administrator, I keep falling back to 1591 and what is expected of a traditional public school principal. And I would say those things there are the same things that would be expected of a traditional public school principal. And yet we're telling the traditional public school principals, you have to have a master's degree and you have to have 4 years of school experience. And I'm not seeing what makes a charter school so different that those same things wouldn't be expected for their instructional administrators. I think back 2 years ago when we were trying to resolve the problem, and it came up when the DAG decided, based on the evaluation of the existing language, that charter administrators needed to be licensed and certificated. When it went to the standards board, it was proposed that there was a way that they could resolve this so we wouldn't have people losing their jobs. We didn't want people losing their jobs. And so what was devised was a limited period where they could complete a portfolio that would be reviewed by the department and people would be licensed and certificated. But now it seems that we've moved from, let's solve this problem, but into creating a different system that will create two tiers of principal standards where I don't think that's necessary. I really don't. Either you believe what you said for the traditional public school principals, and you've told them this is what you need to be an effective principal. This is what you need to be ready and certificated to be the principal. How then to say to another group, you don't really need it? I'm struggling with that. I really, really am. I mean, personally, if I could do it, I would much rather see a limited, let's solve the first problem that we identified, and then take a look at principalship in the bigger realm and say, do we still believe those things identified for traditional are still required? Let's create one system for those people doing the same job rather than having two different systems and wondering, is this one better than that one? I believe the traditional model has in many instances served the charter schools well. When I look at retiring principal head of school, Michelle Marinucci, she went the route of traditional certification and licensure, and she did a bang up job with the Academy of Dover. She really did. And I look at some of the other heads of schools and they're doing a fantastic job with traditional licensure and certification. I don't think it has to be exclusive that innovation and creativity cannot also accompany traditional licensure and certification. It's just my thoughts.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yes, Mr. President. I wrestled with this in October when it first came before us. Hearing my board colleagues tonight, I think that by disconnect with what we are saying or the way we're viewing it is that we already in Delaware have identified that charter schools need the latitude to do some things that are untraditional. So that part of what we are proposing here doesn't give me the same level of heartburn that it did in October. I also think that we may be assuming that and I'm going to use air quotes, to lower a standard would mean that everyone would immediately move to the lower standard, which I think does a disservice to the educators in the charter community who have the same desire of educating to the best of their ability, the students they get to the best of their ability. The reason I asked the question that I did about instructional is because while I would, given what I've done with most of my professional life and what I thought ought to be the pathways to get into that as a vocation, I am one who typically say, well, no, you gotta do this and then you do this and then you do this in order to be able to do this well. Although there are myriad examples of persons who have not done it that way and have been successful. And so when I try to reconcile what are we trying to do here, or what is the Professional Standards Board, and because ultimately what they're trying to do is bring the standard in line with the General Assembly passed, so that we are actually now doing that, because the way that 1596 reads now, to Deb's point, to Ms. Stevens' point, is we're changing that so that it's not any longer that standard. They have another way to get there. And again, read every comment. I read the final order several times, highlighted stuff that I was going to read from the final order that I both agreed with and somewhat disagreed with, but to kind of cut across the field and to get to where we're trying to get to tonight. While it might not be the way Griffin would do it, I understand that there could be another way. Now, and this is coming from someone who served on a charters board, now defunct charters board, has been a charter school parent for more than a decade, and for a time served on the board for the Delaware Charter School Network, and have also been a local LEA school board member as well. So I've seen both sides of it. And I recognize that since Delaware decided that there was going to be an opportunity to do something that was apart from the one way that there was, which was the traditional school district route and have charter schools, we should, within limits, and I think this gives limits, which is why I'm okay even with the addition of the word instructional, because there has to be some of the comments. All right, I said I was gonna cut across the field now. Some of the comments that I read talked about how charters already have the mind that they want the best in their school leaders. And I believe that. I don't, however, think that we establish standards for the best of us. We establish standards for, and I'm gonna say it the way I feel it, for the rest of us. Meaning, I believe that if we make it whatever it's going to be now, that most charter schools, if not all current charter schools, boards configured, will always go for the higher standard. But if there would come a day where there was a board constituted of folk or a newly chartered charter school, authorized charter school, whose leadership said, let's do it a different way, there has to be a floor, which is why I'm okay with what we're proposing here, because it gives them the opportunity to try it a little different. And yet, with all of the supports that are going to come from the department to ensure that these leaders, because I too have to wrestle with what is the ultimate aim of what we're trying to do. But I know enough people in that sphere to know that they have the same desire that the superintendent of, you name the traditional school district, does, but they just do it in a different way. And I think that as much as we wrestle with that, and I'll just talk about Griffin, one man, one vote, as much as I may wrestle with that, because it's not the way that I'm used to, and it's not the way that I can necessarily see, you know, we could do it this way, leave it this way, it would happen. It's something that I am willing, I guess I'm betraying how I'm going to vote tonight. It's something I'm willing to give the department the opportunity to work with them to get done. That's Griffin's comment.
Thank you.
Mr. President, if I may, I too struggle with this. But I also am a person, have always been a leader who thought just because we do something one way doesn't mean it's the way we should always do it. Like, there's a lot of things in our country that if we continue to do them the way they were always be done, there's many people around this table and in this room who wouldn't be in the role that they're in. I do struggle, but I don't struggle with the word instructional as much as I struggle with the word qualified. And why aren't we defining that? Like, I don't know why having this definition around instructional leader doesn't define what or undefine what the word qualified means, right? I also struggle with the humanity of it all. I'm gonna be a little egotistical for a second, right? Like, as a football player, it'd be hard for me to have a soccer coach correct me. And so I struggle with the word, that's what I mean with the word qualified, right? There, some of our charters are certainly specific to a certain thing, but inside of them all, there's still math, English, science, and social studies. So I'm on the fence because of the things I know about how a building runs. Right. I can tell you as a principal, it was hard for me, even with a curriculum and instruction background, going into a classroom of a subject matter that I wasn't very strong in. I could talk to them about the teaching, but now I'm assuming that everything that they're saying around the content is correct. And so I just struggle, but I do hear and empathetic to the thought of why are we continuing to do things the same way just because that's the way we've always done it. So I don't know that I've given any insight in the way I feel I'm going to vote because I am on the fence about a lot of things, but I'm struggling that we didn't talk about the word qualified as much as we talked about other words. Just my thoughts.
Thank you.
I have one more question. What happens if this regulation does not pass? Like, what's the impact of that?
Well, I mean, on the one hand, we have to start over. And it depends on why it does not pass. Because from what I'm hearing from some board members who have spoken, is that if it does not pass, it would not pass because the regulation didn't go far enough to, I don't know what the word, what, you know, didn't go far enough to make it, didn't have the standards high enough set at a similar level as traditional certifications. And to be honest with you, I'm not exactly sure what happens next. I mean, we would need to go back to the drawing board and figure out what it is that we do and come together and come up with a solution. I think that it's difficult because the law is now clear that instructional administrators need to be licensed and certified. And then the pathway that was created to get them licensed and certified cannot be approved. So until a regulation is in place that would do that, if this one does that. And so that's, you know, that's, I can't tell you exactly what's going to happen because we'd be at the drawing board.
So am I reading 1596 as it currently stands correctly in that right now, if you were hired after June 30, 2023, that you have to meet the same standard as a traditional public school leader, having one of those four certifications?
So the Professional Standards Board promulgates the regulations and the department enforces the regulations. And it was the determination of the department at the time when this was passed to not enforce the regulation as it was. And so the regulation that was passed and went into effect in July of 2023 has not been enforced since July of 2023. We do not have an operational regulation currently.
So So right now, because I base much of what I assumed on the fact that 1596, as it currently appears, is what's happening now. That might be the standard, but that's not the standard that charter leaders are currently being held to.
Correct.
Okay.
Currently, I believe there are about 26 charter leaders, charter instructional administrators, who are not licensed and are not certified as administrators. They might have been hired before. They might have been hired after. The portfolio option never became operational.
So that was my next question.
Right.
So there was never the option for those hired before June 30, 2023 to complete the portfolio by June 30, 2024 and have that written.
Correct. I mean, it was ready to go, but.
So we're in literal limbo. This does not pay. Going back to my next question, and this might be too in the weeds, is about how the Professional Standards Board not went about the work that it did to get us to this point, but how it would go about the work to bring us back to this point were this not to pass. One of the things I believe I heard you say a moment ago is that it would depend on what they perceived or understood to be the reasons by the local members on the board as to why they may have voted against it. My question, not a question. Is that right? Did I hear that right?
I think you're going to have to say that again because I lost you somewhere.
I'm
trying to focus as hard as I can.
I do that on Sunday morning too. My greater question is the Professional Standards Board depending on some kind of hint from this board about what we're looking for and would be amenable to passing in the work that they do?
That is part of it. I think you all may have received the history of this regulation, but one of the reasons that it was not enforced is because less than a week after the board had passed, the state board had passed the regulation, and before it went into effect, a bill was filed that undid everything.
Okay.
It undid everything. Now that bill ended up being substituted. It ended up not passing in June of 2023. People worked for a year, my colleagues included, to come up with a type of a compromise.
Okay.
And that's why we're at. What the ramifications are, should this board vote it down? Will there be another bill? I don't know the answer to that question. What is it gonna, what exactly will happen? Will everyone get together and hammer out a compromise? This was the compromise after what happened 2 years ago. Does that make sense?
It makes mad sense. And I have even more questions than I had before. I believe most of them, because I did read all that was given to us and recognize that we're here because of the work of a lot of people trying to come to solution here, which is why I don't want to be so quick to having been on this board for a year and 2 months to now all of a sudden discount all of that work in my vote here tonight to send it back to what, which I now hear we don't know what that might be. So thank you. Thank you. I appreciate all that you have helped me understand tonight. True.
Thank you.
And one more question. And I would like to just weigh in very briefly at the risk of not being redundant, painfully redundant. I've been on the board for almost 6 years now. And when I was approached to the board to ask to serve, I was told that this is a citizens board and you come to the board with your worldview and your perspective, and you didn't have to actually be a resident expert in the field. However, I do have a Bachelor of Science degree in elementary education from 1977, 78. But I've been an insurance agent for 40 years, an entrepreneur. So I'm bringing that mindset to this decision. Early on, when this first introduced this regulation, I was a real proponent of the innovation of charter schools and, you know, just really supporting that innovation and flexibility and needing to do something new and different. And so I really read all of the comments, because I think that's important for us to consider as a citizens board, what the citizens are saying or what the comments are saying. So that really is weighing heavy on me as I just oppose the regulation and the opposition to it. So I'm really trying to be balanced in the narrative. But as I try to articulate it in my own mind, you know, my own thinking, does this regulation give the charter school, the community, the flexibility and the nimbleness that they need in order to continue to operate in that creative space, while at the same time, the standard performance board is operating and adhering to what your legislative mandate is to do around curriculum and standards and those types of things. And so the instructional administrator and the non-instructional administrator seems for me, if I'm thinking this clearly, strikes a balance or a negotiation, or if you would, a place of, okay, you don't have to be licensed if you are a non-instructional administrator. That's the innovation part. You can go out, you can get someone who's innovative, got skills, can, you know, do the financing and do all the creativity, fine. But at the same time, we have to adhere to a standard in terms of education, if you're going to be really impacting teachers, educators, and training, mentoring, and coaching. So that, to me, is a happy medium. And I might be missing the point, and I know it doesn't go all the way where perhaps the charter school community would want, but it doesn't totally go to you have to do it this way. And so from my background, and I'm thinking being insurance for 40 years, when I started, I had to be licensed. Every year after that, I had to have continued education. I had to prove that competency. I had to always be up to date with what was going on in the industry. And to this day, when I'm retired, I still have that license. And so it assures the general public that I am qualified, I'm trained, and I am developing, providing you with a service that I'm knowledgeable, and so that I can do what is best for the general public. So that's where I've been kind of landing with and having conversations. I wanted to be fair to both sides of the argument. And so I just wanted to kind of weigh into the discussion there. Let me ask you a question with regards to leadership in the existing charter schools now. How many charter schools have multiple administrators. How many charter schools would you say have the capacity, if you would, have multiple administrators?
I would say that the majority do. Is it okay if I would defer to an expert who may be sitting behind me?
That's fine.
Good question.
I don't know.
So it depends on what you consider an administrator. In a new charter school, in a new charter school base right now, has one leader with potentially, which they could have an instructional administrator, but it depends on their finances. Academy of Dover has one administrator. They used to have two. Michelle Mariucci just retired. When you have a smaller school, your financials don't allow you to do so. And that's what, because in our larger schools that have been around for a long time, you'll have at least
multiple.
You'll have at least two.
Percentage wise, 70%? Roughly.
Is that 90%? So, two out of our 24 probably
have one.
Have one.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
I have one final comment.
Sure. Go ahead, Deb.
Just a final comment. I'd like to believe there is a solution out there. I really would. And thinking of the work that our colleagues in the department have been doing around pipeline and what Wallace has identified as good practice in terms of developing within your schools a pipeline for leadership, and thinking of what my colleague, Mr. Simmons, has said, in terms of you don't always have to keep doing the things the same way. I really do wish we could break this down into two pieces. You know, taking care of those people that currently need the certificate and or license, and then re-examining what we want to say is an approach for principal licensure and certification here in Delaware for that category of employee. I think there's got to be a solution. I would rely heavily on the expertise of our colleagues from the department. I'd love to see even some of the consultants from Wallace come in and help guide that discussion, but bring all parties to the table. Because I do think there were some people missing in the discussion. I'd love to hear what current traditional public school principals think should be out there for the requirements to be a licensed and certificated principal. I'd like to hear what teacher expectations are. And more importantly, and I think you've heard this coming from members of this board already, we want to be greater involved in these discussions. Because, yeah, you did have the initial meetings with the Charter School Network. But when I took a look at some of the beginning statements about what the Professional Standards Board is expected to do, it says work in conjunction with the Department of Education and the State Board of Education. And yet, you know, I would have loved to have seen one of my colleagues part of those early discussions. I think, you know, it probably would have helped clarify things. But that's what I'd love to see. I believe there's a solution out there. And maybe I'm being naive, but I do believe that there is a research-based solution out there that we could find and make it work for everyone.
Thank you. If there are no further comments or questions, I'll entertain a motion regarding Regulation 1596.
Griffin, I move we approve Regulation 1596 as presented.
Griffin has made a motion to approve Regulation 1596 as stated. Is there a second?
Simmons, second.
Simmons has seconded. After what I've heard, I think we need to do a roll call. A roll call, Mr. Avila.
Mr. President, Dr. Griffin?
Yes.
Dr. Griffin votes yes. Dr. Lahavia?
No.
Dr. Lahavia votes no. Reverend Powell?
Yes.
Reverend Powell votes yes. Mr. Simmons?
Yes.
Mr. Simmons votes yes. Ms. Stevens?
No.
Ms. Stevens votes no. Mr. Brennan?
No.
Mr. Brennan votes no.
Okay. Since the motion is tied, it does not carry.
Mm-hmm.
The motion does not carry due to a tie. All right, thank you. The next two, there are two regulations for information, Regulation 1571, Special Education of Teacher of Students with Disabilities for Information, and Regulation 1573, Teacher of Students with Autism or Severe Intellectual Abilities. It is for information.
So I'm not sure my mind is like right on point here, but the amendments to this regulation, both amendments are exactly the same. I believe they are in 4.2, and the 1573 looks like it has a lot more amendments just because it's older, and there are a lot more standardized amendments to that regulation. But the main amendment is to add science of reading requirements to both of these certifications. So this is part of the same Senate Bill 133, which was passed quite a while ago, to add literacy requirements in ed prep programs. And so I have had questions about most of what's happening is not going to be reflected in, say, the elementary and early childhood certifications, et cetera, though it's reflected within the ed prep programs and the work that Dr. Saylor has done with them in aligning their stuff to the science of reading. But special education is different in the state of Delaware. In the state of Delaware, these are add-on certificates. And so you can pair elementary and special ed. You can pair secondary math and special ed. You can pair these things together. And so people seek special education certification during their initial programs. They also seek them as add-on programs. And so therefore, we needed to have a caveat in there that said that anyone seeking a special education certification would need literacy training. Most of the people, well, all of the people who in the future come out of our early childhood and elementary programs are going to get that within the body of their programs. Does that make sense? And so this is mainly for people who are adding special education onto an existing certification. And so it would require them, well, I mean, it requires everybody, but you can fulfill it in different ways. You do it in the body of your program. You can also take extra coursework. But we also did not want to like require two extra courses because that doesn't make sense because some people would repeat the coursework. And so you can do extra coursework or you could do professional development that is equal to 6 credits. And so we've identified coursework that equals 6 credits. One of the things that we've identified is letters training 1 and 2. There are a couple other things that we've identified. And that's not written into the regulation, that is as approved by the department. And so we're also looking to, in the future, put some options in there for secondary teachers, because we do have people adding it to secondary math for whom letters training may not be the most optimal thing to do. And so there are now trainings that are happening that are geared toward secondary folks. And so we're hoping to put that together, but the requirement doesn't come into play until June 30th of 2027, because that's kind of the timeline for all the EPP approval and all of that kind of thing. And so we put in the regulation now because we wanted to give people plenty of time to understand that in 2 years, you're gonna need this when you apply for certification. Does that make sense?
Any questions? All righty, thank you. Have a good evening. Public comment on regulations. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for public comment on regulations. Ms. Smith, do we have anyone signed up for public comment on regulations?
Yes, sir. We have 3 people on the list in the room.
We will hear from speakers from the sign-up sheet who are present in the meeting room in person first. Then we will recognize speakers logged in via the URL in order that they have signed up. Comments should be limited to 2 minutes for individuals and 3 minutes for organizations. Please note, the board typically will not respond to questions or engage in a dialogue with those offering comments during the board's meeting. Who do we have?
We have Kendall Maxson.
Ms. Maxson.
Good evening, Kendall Maxson, Executive Director of the Bellevue Charter Schools Not Marked. Nothing about us without us. This is not just a phrase from your and my comments at the last state board meeting. It's a fundamental principle that we want to be common practice with our authorizers, and we truly believe should guide decisions affecting all communities. Many of the questions, the comments, all that whole discussion, there were four people right here, five, if you count Leroy, that could have answered all of those questions for you. Nothing about us without us. Right there. I appreciate being able to answer one of the questions. There is a path forward. And it does take into account our philosophical differences. I was going to say thank you. Like, you guys don't understand. I appreciate that you voted that down because we did not want it the way it was. Instructional does not work for us because instructional does have meaning. And I know what it means. So it would have taken the flexibility away from us. But there is a path forward, a space to create language that we believe would make this regulation stronger, would allow for the flexibility that truly reflects the needs of our schools, and that provides for a rigorous alternative routes to certification for those that have proven effective leadership experience. That even though their role is not considered instructional, their experience equates to understanding how to instruct adults, which is truly what an instructional administrator needs to understand and know how to do. The inclusion of alternative pathways for leadership is essential to maintaining equitable access for a diverse and talented pool of school leaders. Research shows that alternative certification programs create stronger, more diverse leadership pipelines. And this certification is not just about leadership access. It's a solution to strengthening the entire educator pipeline. By opening doors for diverse and talented individuals to step into leadership roles, we create an ecosystem that fosters education retention and professional growth, maybe even in traditional schools. The National Center for Education Statistics found that minority educators are more likely to enter the profession through alternative pathways, and the RAND Corporation has shown that charter schools often rely on non-traditional routes to bring in high-quality leaders. By including our community in the conversation and keeping diversity in mind, we can ensure that charter schools continue to access the strongest possible leadership while maintaining the accountability and excellence our students deserve. Our goal is always to develop policies that break down barriers, support a diverse workforce, and ensure equitable opportunities for all students and educators. We look forward to working with you and the department to create the regulation that we need.
Thank you.
Next, we have Margie Lopez Waite.
Evening.
Good evening. So, to quote Mr. Simmons, there's a lot of things that if we did them the traditional way, many of us around this table would not be here, right? So, thankfully, previous generations saw the need to change tradition. I'm not a traditional school leader. I am a founding member of ASPEDA Delaware. We conducted, when I was on the board, we conducted a national search for our head of school. We selected one who came with a wealth of experience in education. It was truly a purist in education, only had education experience, had lots of degrees for education, hired that individual and quickly learned that we had made a mistake. We went back to the drawing board and we realized that we needed somebody that had different skill sets. And that's when I got tapped on the shoulder to go into that role as head of school. So what was it that I offered that maybe that purist educator did not? What I offered was my business experience, 16 years at MBNA, being able to manage projects from concept all the way to implementation, being able to manage hundreds of people, being able to manage multi-million dollar budgets. Also being able to take my education experience because I had made that transition into the classroom as a Spanish teacher, but also taking my community experience, because this was going to be a school that was going to be built for the community, by the community. It was in response to the fact that we were not doing a good job in our traditional schools for English learners. And we felt that we were missing an opportunity by not valuing biliteracy. And so I've now been in this role for almost 20 years. So I'm not a traditional school leader. And so I got my master's degree in education, but it wasn't in school leadership. At the time, we had the six-pack available, so I was able to get my certification that way. But I will tell you that, and I did not, and nothing that I learned in those courses helped me in my journey as a charter leader. The charter world is so different. My husband works in the Brandywine School District. In all the years that I've been in my position, I have consulted with my husband several times. Honey, how do you do this? Have you ever had to do this? Have you ever had to do this in eSchool? Have you ever had to? Nope, district does that. Nope, district does that. Nope, district does that. Because as a charter leader, we have to wear multiple hats. We have to know the whole gamut. Our bandwidth is so wide. And so to think that we should be held to the same qualifications, the same standards as a traditional school leader in a school district does not make any sense. We don't do the same jobs. We do not do the same jobs. And we are not saying that we should be hiring unqualified people to run our charter schools, because like was said tonight, we all have the same goal. We want our students to succeed. We're not in this for the money. We're in it for the passion. So I appreciate those of you that heard that. And I hope that we're able to come back to this table with something that definitely is not traditional, because if you ask the superintendents off the record, they don't like the tradition either. So we've got to break tradition. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have Denise Stover from Providence Creek Academy.
All right, thank you. Good evening.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, and you?
Good, good. My name is Denise Stover. I'm the head of school at Providence Creek Academy. And I love the questions that everyone had today. I really hope at some point in my life I get to work with a lot of you. To answer your question, a traditional principal prep program does not prepare you to be a head of school. A head of school has to understand budget and the idiosyncrasies of unit count and all the great things that I'm sure all of you have learned as either a part of your career or part of being on the board. It doesn't prepare you for three report cards. We have an academic report card. We have an organizational report card. We have a financial performance report card that we get every single year to make sure we're successful. In another lifetime, approximately 7 years ago, I was the director of the charter school office for the Delaware Department of Education. And I will let you know that the traditional principal programs do not prepare a head of school to do the job of head of school. The data that I love to share is that when you look at the most successful schools in Delaware, if we were to rank them by just proficiency rates, you're going to find that typically the top schools in the state are run by currently or have been run by someone who did not have their traditional principal license. Like Deb, I think we had the similar path of becoming a teaching for a long time and then kind of rolling into the leadership. And I do have my principal license. But in my experience with the department, you need to have someone who has true business savvy. You need to have someone who understands truly how to lead. And I believe that the head of school title is completely, completely unique. And I'm realizing that my fellow head of school, Pam Draper, did not sign up. And I'd like to defer the rest of my time, if possible, to her. Okay.
Thank you.
One second,
we're resetting to okay. One.
There you go. That's fine. I'm going to talk fast. I prepared this. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Pam Draper. I am the lead founder and current Chief Advancement Officer of Gateway Charter School, which opened its door 14 years ago. I started this school as a parent, driven by the need to find alternative educational setting for my sons who faced learning differences and struggled in traditional school environments. Gateway Charter School was born out of necessity and a deep commitment to providing supportive and an effective learning environment for students with unique challenges. Over the years, we have witnessed countless students overcome their difficulties and go on to achieve success in high school and college. This journey has been incredibly rewarding and has reinforced my belief in the power of tailored education. Today, I stand before you to express my concerns regarding the proposed bill that would require charter school heads to be certified as school principals or superintendents. While I understand the intention behind this bill, I believe it overlooks the unique nature of charter schools and a diverse skill set required to lead them effectively. Charter school heads are not just academic leaders, they are CEOs who must navigate complex operational, financial, and community challenges. An academic certification, while valuable, does not necessarily equip an individual with the broad range of skills needed to manage a charter school successfully. My own experience as a parent turned school founder is a testament to this. Without a traditional background in education, I was able to assemble a team that led Gateway Charter School to success through dedication, innovation, and a deep understanding of our students' needs. I urge you to consider the broader implications of this bill and the potential it has to limit a pool of talented and dedicated individuals who can make a significant impact on the charter school sector. Let us focus on the outcomes and the positive changes we can bring to our students' lives rather than imposing restrictive requirements that may not align with the diverse needs of our schools. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Next is State Board Business Committee and meeting reports. There was an opportunity for members to provide information and written reports made available on eBoard on any events or committee meetings attended since the last meeting. Anything further from anybody?
I have something that I did not submit. I went to an equalization funding meeting on February 24th. The contractors that were hired, PCG Public Consulting Group, has made some recommendations that we're not allowed to share detail quite yet, but some highlights I can share with you. The new formula will be simple, modern, and stable. It will also be predictable, and it will be phased in over time. We have another meeting tomorrow, and then also I'm attending with Deb on Monday, the Women Leading in Delaware Education Conference at UD, and then touring early college school with Leroy Travers next week sometime.
Hey, thank you.
Yep.
Mr. President, I also have a report. I attended the Reading Consortium's retreat on Saturday.
Thank you.
Long day. very interesting and productive meeting. While I went in with the thought process that the three subcommittees were going to report out to the rest of the to the other two committees, we received a report from the initial report from AIR, American Institute on Research, on the landscape analysis that they're conducting for the city of Wilmington, which phase one was just mostly data that confirmed what we already knew around what we see that's those outside impacts on education, health, and those social determinants, et cetera, et cetera. So that part was, I just think it just confirmed what we knew. The second part of the meeting, which I didn't expect, was that the subcommittees broke back into small groups and were charged to eliminate two of the possible nine redistricting plans. Without going into detail, because it's in behind me, one of the committees eliminated five of nine. One of the committees omitted four of nine, and one omitted three of nine. So I think that all of them were very productive in sending back to Reading full body the plans. And let me say this, of those 5, 4, 3, the three were consistent across all three committees. And those were that none of the subcommittees wanted one district to take over the whole city. So those were eliminated on everyone's list. Some that were interesting that I think people kept on the list were because they needed more information, i.e. a metro school district. Like, what's that mean? And what we found is that the definition was that it's the city limits with a little buffer zone. Like, but then the question is, how much of a buffer zone? And so someone stated that when even when you look across the country of major cities that have city school districts, they're not just city, they're metro. So I think that helped to let, make people keep that on the plan. As one of the options, excuse me. The last thing that I'll say about the meeting that was interesting, and I'm not sure how this will play out eventually, the mayor texted me that he was going to attend at some portion, but not sure how long he would stay. He was there from start to finish. I say that because, and I'll use you as an example, when the president speaks, it carries influence. When the mayor speaks, it carries influence. So I'm not sure, you know, I've been in a number of meetings having worked for him when he was the governor, that people sit around the table and there's 10 people who present and there's 11 opinions, right? And so when we leave, we often get texts or about what we really felt, because it's hard, you know, human nature makes it hard for the mayor to say, I'm in favor of X, Y, and Z, and then you to stand up and go like, well, I ain't in favor of any of them, right? So so just curious how that will play out eventually, but I thought it was a show of how important this is to him to commit. We were there from 9:30 to 4:30. So that's my report.
Champions education, for sure. Anybody else? You got 3 minutes.
Quiet month.
Good. Thanks. All right, then. Did you want to say anything? Okay, then we're moving on. Executive Director's report, Ms. Smith.
Thank you. You have my written report, and I wanted to let you know that I'm beginning work with the Office of the Governor to launch the application period for the next student member appointment. So I'd like to launch that application in April. I am planning our next student forum at Polytech before our regular meeting on April 10th, which is the second Thursday, and I'm working on that with Mr. Sawney. And be on the lookout soon for some date choices for a strategic planning meeting in May. You guys are always very good about answering your emails and choosing your dates that work, so I'm very appreciative of that.
Excellent. Anything else for Ms. Smith? Are there any educator applications need to be filled out by somebody in this room?
Not that I know.
I didn't see you down there, Megan. I'm sorry. All right. Thank you. Legislative update. During legislative session, we had this item on our agenda to give board members an opportunity to ask questions or raise discussion about education-related bills. Chief of Staff Lisa Henry provided information which is posted on eBoard. If there are any questions or comments from board members, please send those in an email to Ms. Smith. I'm sure there'll be a few, so please take care of that for us ASAP. Formal public comment. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for general comment. Ms. Smith, is there anyone signed up for public comment?
Yes, we have Kendall Maxson.
All right, thank you. We will hear from speakers from the sign-up sheet who are present in the meeting room in person first. Then we will recognize speakers logged in via the URL in the order that they signed up in the chat box. Comments should be limited to 2 minutes for individuals and 3 minutes for organizations. As a reminder, the board typically will not respond to questions or engage in a dialogue with those offering comments during the board meeting. Ms. Maxson?
Thank you. Good evening again. Kendall Maxson, Executive Director for the Delaware Charter Schools Network. I told you once before that I wanted to be able to bring good news to the State Board each month because you are the authorizer for 22 of our 24 charter schools. So here I am. Last Friday, 600 attendees from 18 of our 24 charter schools attended CharterCon 25, creating a culture of literacy. We were grateful to have so many members of the department, the University of Delaware, and DSU, and our own community members as part of the over 60 speakers talking about leadership, literacy, numeracy, and AI literacy. Shout out to the governor and Secretary of Education for showing up and sharing their time with our community. Our community collaborated, networked, and learned from and with each other for everything literacy across all of the content areas.
and how we can bake that into our culture. Finally, I was super proud of our DCSN Student Advisory Council. There are students from 11th and 12th grade across many of our charter schools. Not all of them yet have one in there, but these students volunteered all day. They were there from the beginning at 7 o'clock in the morning till the very end, when helping clean up before. They were also moderators of panel discussions with our nonprofit collaborators, helping lead discussions as true facilitators would do. And then they got to sit on stage and introduce myself, Secretary Martin, Faith Muirhead from the University of Delaware, and TJ Hoffman from an AI company. They were able to talk through what we as adults were talking about. They provided their insights on their education, which I think is crucial. It was an incredible day, lifting up best practices and creating connections to impact the lives of all of our families. And we're already planning for next year's CharterCon 26. So please stay tuned for information on that, because the State Board would be very welcome. Thank you.
Before we move into the State Board hearing and appeals, Reverend Powell, we did you have anything you want to add to committee reports before we move on?
No.
All right. Thank you. We will turn the boundary dispute for 22647 WM Farm Lane, Georgetown, Delaware, 19947 zip code. It is for action. Dag Corbin.
So I'm going to give you just a little brief rundown of everything, and maybe a little bit more than brief, so I apologize in advance. So just as a little background, on November 22nd, 2024, Merrill and Heather Moore filed a petition with the board asking for the board to resolve a boundary dispute concerning their property of 22647 WM Farm Lane, Georgetown, Delaware, 19947. The board appointed a hearing officer and sent notice to the Moore family, Cape Henelopen School District, and Indian River School District. The notice and the agenda for the hearing was published on the Delaware meeting calendar on January 15, 2025. On January 27, 2025, a hearing officer conducted a hearing, afterwards issuing a recommendation to the board containing findings of fact, conclusions of law, and a decision, or a recommendation rather. Ms. Smith provided the board members with a complete record in this matter, included the hearing officer's recommendations, exhibits filed by the Moore family, and collected by Ms. Smith on behalf of the board, and the matter is now on the board's agenda for consideration. I would just like to make a couple of reminders before I get into more of the facts of the appeal. I just want to remind everyone that during deliberations, there can be no interruptions from members of the public, nor is it appropriate for the board to ask questions of anyone else except of me if they need clarification. The board cannot bring in personal knowledge that is outside the record into the discussion. You basically have three options for a motion when you guys get there. The options are to accept the hearing officer's recommendations in full, to accept but modify it in a particular way, to reject the hearing officer's findings of fact as it relates to this boundary dispute and what you're finding in the alternative. So, according to 14 Delaware Code 1025, in cases of doubt or controversy as to the correct location of the existing boundary of any reorganized school district, State Board of Education shall fix and establish the boundaries after examining the available records and after a due hearing of the owners of the property that may be involved. So this section comes up when there is uncertainty as to the existing boundary. So the board is tasked with deciding two things. One, is there a case of doubt or controversy as to the existing boundary between Cape Henelopen and Indian River School Districts, or is there uncertainty as to the existing boundary? If so, and after examining all the available records, does the property of 22647 WM West Farm Lane in Georgetown, Delaware, fall within the Cape Henelopen School District or the Indian River School District? The board must have substantial evidence within the record to support its findings. So as previously stated, the property is involved in Georgetown, Delaware, and it borders Cape Henelopen School District and Indian River School District. The Moore family, who filed the petition, is requesting that their property be located within Cape Henelopen, but it has been incorrectly assigned to Indian River School District. The property has been in the Moore family since 1918, and the property lines have not changed since then. In 2015, the Moore family constructed a new home on their property. When the home was built, it was assigned to Cape Henelopen School District. Both the Moore family's daughters have attended Cape Henelopen from kindergarten until high school and middle school, respectively. So in 1974, the written boundary descriptions of the Delaware School District boundaries was created, and that was provided to you all as an exhibit. Then in 2004, the University of Delaware issued the report entitled Delaware School District Organizations and Boundaries, Closing the Data. That report used the Geographic Information System, or GIS, to modify some of the boundary descriptions that were found to be ambiguous and confusing, and included both the 1974 written descriptions between the two school districts as well as a map. So this boundary line between Cape Henelopen and Indian River divides the Moore property. Most of the farm, the land, the mailbox, driveway, frontage, and road access from the property is located within Cape Henelopen. The family estimates that around 60% of their property is located within Cape Henelopen School District. The 2004 report moved the dividing line between these two districts around some property lines, but the changes didn't impact the Moore's property at all. So the hearing officer found that there was a controversy as to the correct location of the existing boundary. Given that when the family built their home in 2015, it was assigned to Cape Henelopen. Then in February of 2024, the Moore family was notified by Cape Henelopen that the district has notified that your address has been updated to reflect that you reside in Indian River School District, and that they needed to complete school choice applications to keep their daughters in Cape Henelopen. This is really the first time the Moore family learned that they weren't supposed to be in Cape Henelopen School District, and there were no changes to the boundary line since 2004. The hearing officer was unclear as to the exact reasons why this change occurred in 2024 after the Moore family attended Cape Henelopen and has paid taxes in Cape Henelopen School District for years. There's been no redrawing of the district boundary since they built their home in 2015, and the state made that determination when the house was built. Furthermore, tax records indicate that the Moore family has been paying Cape Henelopen school taxes for over 50 years. The hearing officer found this sudden change to be unfair because the Moore family had relied on this determination when it came to the education of their children. Now their children risk attending new schools later in their public education career, and the hearing officer found this change to be somewhat arbitrary after the district had over a decade to correct this error and did nothing. So that is essentially what is before you, a determination over this property and whether or not, based off of the all the information available to you, whether or not this property is supposed to be in Cape Henelopen School District or should be in Indian River School District. So I open it up to you all for deliberations, and I am here to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions for Dag Corbin? All right. I'll entertain a motion regarding the boundary dispute.
Griffin, I move that we accept the recommendation of hearing officer as presented.
Griffin's made a motion. I need a second.
Reverend Powell second it.
Reverend Powell second it. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries. Remember, our next meeting is the second Thursday in April, which is April 10th, and it will be at the Polytech School District. And now I'll entertain a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting.
Griffin, I need to be adjourned. Somebody else is talking
fast. Griffin's made a motion. Is there a second?
Stephen second.
Stephen second. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
It is 7:31 p.m. and the meeting is adjourned. Safe travel, everyone. Good night.